Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, this is our Olympic preview.
I'm not allowed to call it special. Yeah, I see now, you resisted calling it a special.
Yeah, because the other day we were all in mixed company with people who also happen to be fans of the show.
By mixed company, we mean people who podcast and people who don't.
Yes, us being the podcasters.
People who listen to podcasts is people who don't.
Yeah, And I remember saying, we were going back and forth, but someone had asked us about our next show, and I'd said, well, it's our Olympic special. And the comment was made, and it might have even been made by you.
Oh, yeah.
That we do too many specials.
Well, everything seems to get a special. I think more so over the past few years, it seems to be increased. Like, we've done Olympic shows before. I don't know that we've called them specials. I guess we'd have to go back and check. But
well, I'm not going to get too off topic here. So I thought about, after taking that criticism, I went away and I thought about our sort of annual menu of shows. Mm-hmm. We have our Christmas specials. Okay, fair enough. It's called special. We always do a spring special. I don't know where that came from, but we do it because it's always a two-parter that we do in the spring, and it's not necessarily... It's always something where it's not necessarily relevant to what's going on at that time. Our summer movie preview is actually not a special. It's just the summer movie preview. And the summer movie roundup is actually the roundup.
All right. I know the Christmas special is definitely a special.
Yeah, but I've already mentioned that. So I want to challenge this assertion that we have too many specials, like some cheap fast food restaurant.
We could go the other way. I mean, it'd be kind of a funny joke if everything was a special.
Yes.
Like, so it's, you know, we don't have any other ideas special.
So therefore, this is our Olympic preview show, which means it's not a special.
There you
and
go.
It will stand out.
And technically, only about half of it is going to be about the Olympic preview. So. Huh.
Yeah, so we're going to talk Winter Olympics, but why don't we get in? We also have another topic we thought we'd batter around for a little bit.
Yep.
Do you want to roll?
I need you to go first because I want to make sure I don't pronounce it improperly.
Apparently this week, I get confused in France. France is one of those countries that because they don't really have an active monarchy anymore, they're in charge of things. They have presidents, but they also have prime ministers and all kinds of stuff. And not being an expert on how they sort of organize things in France... Macron, he's the president, right?
Yeah.
President Macron this week met with Prime Minister May, and Britain being a country where you've just got the Prime Minister and then the monarch, and there's no other sort of individually.
It's like a separate executive branch.
Exactly. There you go. That's the correct way to say it. Apparently this week in conversations about Brexit, which is anything Britain talks, talks about when it talks to any other country, Macron had, I think, offered to send the Bayeux tapestry back to be on display in
that's what I needed you to do. How did you just say that?
Bayeux. B-A-Y-E-A-U-X. Bayeux, because you say it in French.
It will be too difficult for me to do that because I'm gonna just go with Bayeux.
Okay, Bayeux.
It's clearly got to bear some relation. I don't know what the Bayeux is. Is it a...
Isn't Bayeux something to do with waters? No, I mean, I remember
That would explain things, because, you know, down on the bayou in Louisiana...
What's bayou?
But I'm going to guess they're really the same, because it looks to me like it's spelled differently. I meant to look up ahead of time and see...
I think it's similar. Put it this way,
they've got to be related.
If you go to Louisiana, everything's cooked in butter, and if you go to France, you're eating a lot of dairy.
Yeah.
So...
you know where the Louisiana... French Louisiana, it's the... Cajuns or whatever. They came from Canada. It's very confusing. It's like a whole thing
French
where they moved
aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So. I must say, I give the French their due. France, ourselves, there were periods of history where we ran everything. I understand that, you know, Britain, we've left behind such things as cricket and stuff like that. But the French, I mean, they've got whole parts of the world who pretty much identify themselves as... You know, they speak their language and all that type of thing.
Well, because now it becomes like a spite thing. It's in Canada, like where you know, the folks are there, they're like, well, we're not going to change. You know, it's about identifying yourself as
relative to the larger group. Do you know who the forgotten European emperors were?
No.
The Dutch. I'm always amazed when people go, yeah, don't you know that the Dutch had you know, whole section of the, you know, we think of Spain, we think of Britain, we think of France.
Now, to be clear, I didn't forget about the Dutch as a group, but I forgot that that's,
you know, but, but the identification. Have, they have a history of taking over countries and running everything and treating the natives very badly, just like us. And yet the Dutch seem to skate away on this general sense of, hey, aren't the Dutch great? They're always having a good time. Yeah, but they're just as imperial as the rest of us.
That's true.
Yeah. So
well, in fact, this is going to, this will actually kind of fold in to some of the real things we're talking about. So, but Bayeux tapestry is, just so people know, is physically what it is it's a
tapestry.
Long cloth. That actually, you know what, it's actually not a tapestry. So technically a tapestry apparently is when pictures are woven into fabric.
Yes.
So that like the actual cross, you know, it's done that. This is actually an embroidery, meaning they took a big piece of fabric and then they stitched in pieces.
Isn't it the same thing? Isn't weaving just embroidery but with a machine?
Like a weave picture, like, you know, you have a loom. And the actual fabric would be like you'd run different color fibers through there in order to make the parts go that way. So but it's, we'll call it a tapestry anyway because that's what everybody else calls it. Although I did see, like, you know, some historians have taken to calling it an embroidery. Let's say it's 20 inches tall, but it's 230 feet long.
Yes.
And so it's like a big, long scroll, basically. It's 230 feet, you know, folks. We're approaching football field.
Currently on display in one of the northern districts of France. And I can't remember which one. And it's actually not... I could be wrong here, so please, someone on your own time, Wikipedia. Even though it's to do with the Norman invasion, for some reason I remember seeing it when I was on my way via car from Calais across northern France to Normandy. But for some reason... in my mind, I'm like, oh, the Bayeux tapestry's there, and I didn't think I was in Normandy yet. So I've qualified my own ignorance there with all kinds of not sure, and unlike myself, I'm not making all kinds of assertive statements here, but it is on display in
It's sort of like in a curved state, like so that you're like walk around.
Yes, you're not walking 230 feet.
It's not having like a very long building just to put the thing in there. So in fact, one of the things they're talking about, a bunch of people have said, so they're supposed to loan it over, and a bunch of people have said, we're not sure if you can really physically do that, you know, because I don't think they want to like take it and roll it up like a big poster.
But that's what you do.
But apparently, I don't know. Maybe they're going to try to move it in whole.
You roll it, but you roll it and hermetically seal it. Okay, so 230 feet is what, about 70 yards. So they're going to put it on one of those big long beds, like, you know, when you ever see. Have you ever watched those like TV shows on Discovery Channel about building the world's biggest airliner? And there's always some section where the wings were so big they had to transport them by canal. And you know, I mean, maybe they're thinking of that. Right. I mean, then again, it's only 20 miles across the channel.
So they're loaning it, I think, because they're refurbishing the place it's in now. Like, so it's not. Oh, see, I didn't they had to put it someplace.
I thought it was
so
some sort
like,
of.
Well, we'll loan it to you guys. And there's actually I forget which.
That's so very French of them, isn't it?
I don't have the original article up, but which museum. Did you see? Do you remember what museum it is?
That's supposed to.
So there's actually a competition now that has emerged. Like in the last day, some other, like the, I think the, an Hastings based museum has now suddenly said, well, you could send it to us.
Because that's where the battle was.
Battle of Hastings, which we'll get into all this stuff in a second. But so now there's some competition about getting it, who's going to end up with it. But it's not even supposed to be that long, for like a year or two or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, in classic French fashion, they're going to give it to you and then they're going to want it back.
So what this tapestry is it's an illustration of a story.
A historical story, right? Pictorial history.
So literally, like, it's almost like a comic book.
It is. I mean, I know, and that's a throwaway.
Like a graphic novel.
But it is. It's a graphic novel.
It has a bunch of, like, some short phrases embroidered in Latin.
Yeah.
Although they say some of it like is Latin with a little tinge of English to it. And of course this would have been a different type of English at that time.
But, yeah.
Middle English.
Right? Actually, it's actually ye old English.
No, I think it'd be middle
ye
English.
Ye olde English.
Because old English is pre-Norman and then this would be post-Norman. So I think it's middle English.
That's a generic ancient times noise.
So it's embroidered in and it's not like, it doesn't have... doesn't have boxes.
No.
Like, so it's somewhat continuous, and like a bunch of the historical interpretations of it have, you're never quite sure, like, okay, is this person off to the right side? Are they really a part of the next vignette?
Yes.
Are they, like, are they the right person? Are they these important people? Because we'll talk about it in a second about what it's about, but it's a little bit unclear. But it's It's kind of cool, and it's got like a lower band and an upper band, and the lower band has a bunch of like little smaller pictures, and like during the battle part of it, it's all like dead bodies and dead animal bodies on the bottom band, and then like other parts, it's just decorative.
And obviously when, you know, what's his name gets the arrow in his eye, that's, you know, everyone also remembers that.
Yeah, there's a whole debate about it. So anyway, what it is about...
And I've forgotten his name. I'm going to come back to this. Yeah, because I do have some tangential stuff that we're going to talk about here.
So what this is... what they call the Norman Conquest of England. And actually, maybe you should... is it more interesting to hear me talk about it after reading it on Wikipedia, or better for you to talk about it as somebody who actually learned it in school?
I think it might be more entertaining if I attempt to recall it, but okay. I would not, but I think we need to qualify this by saying, normally, I'd like to think that most of what comes out of my mouth, I say it with such intent that you can take it as fact.
Right.
Right now, because I'm of indeterminate middle age... If you listen to this show and then email us and go, well, you were wrong about that,
right.
I'm not going to challenge you. I'm going to go, well, there you go. I don't know what I'm talking about. The Battle of Hastings, when William the Conqueror, I guess he was King William, when King William came over from France, happened in 1066. It is the first, 1,000 years after the Romans invaded, it's the second big invasion from continental Europe of the British Isles. Right. And... my understanding, and again, I'm not saying I know this stuff. It's one of the first things you learn when you're a kid in England. In the English history, sort of revolves around sort of two moments. You have the Romans come in and Julius Caesar, and you learn all that stuff. And then, sort of the next big date in history that you learn is 1066, because that's when basically French nobleman, and you're going to fill me in on all this stuff in a little while, decides that he's coming back to claim his part of England, and they come across the Channel and invade. There's a big battle, and the local...
Harold,
yeah, he gets an arrow in his eye, and then William conquers and becomes King William the First of Great Britain, of England, and then this sort of whole chain of history that runs through Henry VIII and Henry V and Agincourt and all the way through, you know, it's a big moment, dead serious now. And I'm only saying this in retrospect, in looking back on my own damaged knowledge. It's sort of the moment when Britain, it's important because Britain sort of starts to become sort of a monarchy in the stuff. And maybe monarchy is the wrong word, but stuff starts very clearly being passed on by bloodline and birthright, rather than prior to that, where there were people in their little kingdoms killing other people Game of Thrones styles and sort of claiming that they are in charge.
Yeah, well, especially in the lead up to this stuff. Yes. So
it is quite important from that perspective.
I mean, and as an outsider, I view it this way. Like, so,
and again, all you need to know, 1066.
You can is the fob year. Off and a lot two, of knowledge two things, by just saying two things that. Happen that year that lead to this.
Yeah.
You know, so the we have the Anglo-Saxons. Anglo-Saxons ran England from, Great Britain from, basically from the Romans.
Post-Romans.
Yeah, yeah. So we're talking about like 400, year 400 or 500 or something like that. I can't remember exactly. So that, it's not one family, but it's one ethnic group.
Yes.
And there's a lot of like people don't have an heirs. Like, I mean, at this point.
But it's all people claiming their sort of square mileage.
This is really full on Games of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like in the sense that more recent, you know, when we talk about the modern monarchy, there's certainly like family, but this is cases where like, people have 18 different styles. Like William was a bastard son of another person in the Norman thing, and he collects his half brothers. Like he has a series of half brothers to get together to do this.
Basically, back in those times, if you weren't
one of them was a bishop.
If you weren't,
of the tapestries is running around with a club because apparently bishops used to go kill people then.
Frankly, back in those times, if you weren't a half brother or a bastard, you're the one who is illegitimate.
Exactly.
I mean, really, because everyone is.
So Edward the Confessor.
Oh, there you go.
King, is the last Anglo-Saxon. Well, other than Harold, who Harold only gets a short stint, but Edward the Confessor, I think, 20, 30 years or something like that, but has no heir. And the, you know, some things basically say that was intentional. You know, he was leading a pious celibate lifestyle, whatever it is. But there's nobody to step in, and so the story, according to Norman things, is that he promised, because he gets support from William, you know, in that group of the Normans, he promised that they could step in when he died. Meanwhile, so he dies, and then Harold is another branch of the Anglo-Saxon. And he's like a niece or nephew or something like
and
that.
And he thinks we're still on the old system of if you can pull the sword out of the stone, then
well, but they
the
have
king.
Like so. I mean, so Edward, and I'm being half Edward, facetious Edward when I dies, say that, but, and they have yeah. like a they have a committee meeting. I forget. Yeah. It's like something with a W. They have a committee meeting and they say, okay, Harold, you'll be the king.
Yeah.
And he gets 6 months out of it. Like, so literally he, you know, he comes in early 1066. And I think the battle was in October 1066. I can't remember exactly, but it was in the
fall. If you say so.
But like 3 months before that, he had fought off an invasion from, I think, the Dutch area. I forget who it was. It was the Battle of Stamford Bridge, which I thought was interesting.
Yes.
Because Stamford Bridge is the home of Chelsea.
Yeah.
But it turns out they have nothing to do with each other. Like, they're actually two separate. Like, Stamford Bridge, except the battle is over on the East Coast.
Except for all the casual racism, probably. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. Well, at that time, I mean, what was it like to be racist?
Says an Arsenal fan who's only passionate about ending it all.
Yeah. So, So Harold like fights off that battle, and then 3 months later tries to fight off William. And like this is not like a protracted war. This is one battle, and he's done basically.
Well,
like, the battle lasts a day or two or something like that.
I mean, it's
but the arrow in the eye thing, that's the story. But then people are not sure if that's really true. On the tapestry itself, there's a picture where he's got like an arrow. He's holding it, and it appears to be stuck in his eye. But they've figured out that that was embroidered in later. That it wasn't part of the original embroidery, and it's not clear. Did somebody go? Like, there's definitely been efforts to like clean this thing up over time.
See, and that's interesting because I mean, again and again, you know, I learned this when I was, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years of age, and have really not revisited it since. One of the things you learn is Harold gets an arrow in his eye.
Right.
That's how. And then again, when you're that age, like, oh, like, wow, that's really cool. And maybe
George Washington chopped down the cherry tree kind
of
story.
Yeah, maybe it's some sort of like in teacher training school, they go, yeah, when you got these young kids, throw them this bone and they'll concentrate for another 10 minutes and then throw them another bone and they'll concentrate. And so when you go, oh, arrow in his eye, you're all sitting there, oh, that must have been so terrible.
So like this is the inflection point in governance of England. You now have the Norman.
Yeah, I said that earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's who we have. It's that family still. Like, you know, there have been shifts and things, but it's like they said that the current Queen of England is a descendant of William.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
You know, mind you, it went off like other people maybe should have been in line and they bounce around, but there is a line of genetics.
I mean, illegitimates and bastards never go out of style. Yeah, so therefore, yes. But yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. And so, but to be fair, I don't want to digress back into my childhood too much, but we are taught, you know, we're talking about it now, and basically William invaded and took over. I mean, yeah. I guess you could say it in that throwaway way, but we are taught in England, so you're not suddenly at 7 years of age thinking like, we're all illegitimate, we need to fight back type thing. You know, you are taught that William brought a sense of organization.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's known as a good king, you know, a good king. In terms of bringing structure to, you know, what is still a pretty tribal and sectarian society back then.
Right.
And so, you know, for us, 1066, it's a big moment.
Yeah.
It's you know, it's like the U.S. Civil War, perhaps, or 1776, or I don't know if that's a
fair comparison. If you're Scottish, it's probably not as nice, or Irish, it's probably not as nice, because you're more technically, putting aside people moving all over the country, you know,
well,
descended from different groups.
Well, the Scots and the French have always been quite tight because, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend type thing. And so it is interesting how all this ultimately, you know, this is all a whole bunch
of familial relationships. Yeah, well, that's the thing, is like, so it isn't.
So
what people, one of the things I find fascinating is, like, you know, as an American, you tend to think of our model. You had Native Americans and then, you know, various European people came in and pushed them out. And
but it feels much cleaner, isn't it?
Exactly.
It feels cleaner.
And reason enough, and we have good history, you know, for that. But here, it isn't as if the Anglo-Saxons that were deposed by the Normans were from England. It's not like they had been there for thousands and thousands of years. They were all Vikings and things, too. They were all part of the Anglo-Saxons were Germanic tribes that came across and with the once Rome fell, they took all that space back up, you know, basically filled the vacuum. And so, in fact, like language wise, we talked about Old English was essentially a Germanic type language. Then you mix in the Norman piece, which was another, like, it's not French or it's not like a Romance language, I don't think, but you mix in these pieces there.
Yeah,
it gets very interesting. Like, talk about the language going
basically, if you're a Trump supporter, foreigners have been taking your jobs for years. This is how.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, like when you start going back, you know, 1,000 years instead of our, like, our 300 years, 1,000 years ago, like everybody was in flux.
Especially in Europe, where you know there weren't natural borders of seas. So I mean, again, obviously we're talking about Great Britain, but you know, you shouted out the Vikings, who were known as being a seafaring group.
Right.
But then on continental Europe, you know, everyone's rolling around everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because there's no natural border.
And moreover, because of the fact that we did not exactly have great documentation of things, the winner gets to write the story, right? So one of the things about this, so it tells the whole battle story and taking over. It actually apparently, like, it doesn't stomp all over Harold's memory. It actually paints him to be a good and valuable opponent, you know, like, yes, we beat him, but, you know, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
The beginning of it has Harold coming over and it says Harold swears an oath. And nobody, like, well, all the little stories about it say, it's like, well, nobody really knows what the oath is. But the premise there, the theory is that it was a statement that, well, Harold came across while Edward was still alive and said, hey, I'm with you, William. You know, whenever this goes down, you can come over here. And when he ascends to be king, I think to some extent that's the excuse in here. Like, they call it an apologia, some Latin word, but it doesn't really mean apology. It means like a defense. And so
old apologia. Yeah, right. Everything about
I think the entirety of the story, the reason for the tapestry is to paint a picture of why William was, this was a appropriate step.
Yep.
And like, listen, we appreciate the fact that we deposed the prior king's good and valuable person, but like, here's how it all played out, everybody. And it's in pictures because none of you know how to read.
Yeah.
And so they would hang out the tapestry every year, apparently before it, like, actually somebody picked up that was a really historic thing. But up until then, it was hung out at the monastery once a year during a festival.
It actually is one of my regrets from going to Northern France a couple of years ago. And you can go back and listen to our summer vacation show from 2016. It's one of my regrets. I actually didn't go and look at it because, again, it is an integral part of two nations' history. It really is. It's an integral part of French history and it's an integral part of British history. And, you know, I don't want to be too sort of facetious about all of this, but it is fascinating how when you look at the Anglo-French relationship now, you can see how, you know, whenever people revert back to their prejudices and snobberies and attitudes about the other lot, it's because we really are sort of, you know, two nations divided by a very wide river, which is what the English Channel basically is.
Yeah.
You know, it is, it's slightly different than, you know, it's even different.
It makes more sense that there'd be like a nation state built around the two sides of the channel than like isolated, not across the channel. Like, you know, it's like almost like river between the two things.
Like I mean, when you do go to Northern France feels like England. It really does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the climate is the same, you know, sort of the agriculture is the same, the, you know, whatever the word is for how the society sort of revolves around fishing and dairy and all this sort of stuff. There's so many similarities. Whereas if you go to southern France, where it's sandier and sunnier and the Mediterranean influence and the Spanish influence, that you could almost make a case that there's a bigger difference between northern France and southern France than there is between northern France and England.
Italy, right.
You know, and it is interesting there. And like I say, it wasn't taken as such a big deal when William showed up and started running things. It was like, oh, okay.
So if anybody's interested, there's a number of websites that have the whole thing. There's one, bayoutapestry.org.uk, where you can click through every part of it. And it explains, okay, this is the scene that's showing this, and here's what it translates all the Latin to English, and you can see what all the different parts are. I think it translates it all. It's pretty interesting, you know, like the whole setup there. I'm trying to think if there's any other things there before I get into some goofy stuff.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it is a fascinating artifact of history from a time, like you said, when people couldn't write and people couldn't read and write. So there's no written. I mean, and it's interesting. So, you know, if you just go back over our conversation for the last 15 minutes, there are assumptions about what occurred that are drawn only by this tapestry.
That's what I found interesting is there's less questioning of the premise of it than I would expect. Like, it's like, oh, listen, we only got so many historical documents.
Yeah.
We're going to take it as true.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, you think about like somebody writing stuff embroidered in there. Like, you know, yeah. It glosses over some details, I sure. imagine. But one of the funny things, I actually kind of vaguely recall this, although I didn't know what it was connected to, is there was a, you know, memes, internet memes.
Yeah.
Like, so there was one where you could... Somebody had created some software where you could put in stuff and do it in the style of a Bayeux Tapestry.
Oh, really?
So, for example, I'm going to show you a picture, but this one here where it says, "Thou cannot touches this. Stop. Tis be the time of hammer."
You know, just so, send that to me. We'll bang that up on the blog.
There's another one here that was, "Lucas, I am thy father. Nay."
Yeah. And I will put pictures of these up on the blog. And if you go back, if you listen to the show not via the blog, go back to the blog and you can see what we're talking about. But what I'm, but the reason I say that is if you've never seen the Bayeux Tapestry, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing thing. If you want more history about 1066, I'm going to shout you out. One of the best books ever. I don't know. You've watched the show on TV. I've not. Was it on Comedy Central or USA or Spike Drunk History?
Comedy Central.
Comedy Central. I've never seen that show. But if you like comedy reading...
What it is for anybody who wants to know is it literally like you have comedians who get drunk, or at least they appear to get drunk, and they relay a historical story.
Yeah.
And so they're talking in a room, but then they have a set of actors who... They don't act, the actors like just mouth what the person who's drunk is saying. And
like
so,
a
like,
recreation,
it'll be like Ben Franklin is doing something with his, you know, getting the lightning on the key there on the kite. And then in the middle, like, he'll burp because the person who is the drunk person is burping. It's fairly
funny. If that's your thing, one of the best books about this period of history, and it says so much about this period, it talks about this period of history, but it also talks about the very British way of learning history. I read it when I was a kid. It was funny when I was a kid. I read it again when I was an adult. It's hilarious when you're an adult. It's called 1066 and all that. Basically, the title alone is a play on the fact that everything we learn in England revolves around 1066.
Did you say when the book was written?
It was written in 1930 by R.J. Yeatman and W.C. Seller. And it's sort of a satire. It's like a goofy history book. I mean, it's a 1930s version of like one of those Daily Show, Jon Stewart, America books. I will read a section. So it's in the style of a history book. While the Roman Empire was overrun by waves, not only of Ostrogoths, Visigoths, and even Goths, but also of Vandals, who destroyed works of art, and Huns, who destroyed everything and everybody, including Goths, Ostrogoths, Visigoths, and even Vandals. Britain was attacked by waves of Picts, and in brackets, and of course, Scots. So it's, you know, it's a goofy... Again, if you like satirical reading...
You can see the seeds of Monty Python right there.
Well, there you go, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But written in ninth, very funny, 1066 and all that. I'll shout that out to anyone. If you want a book to read, find that and read it. You'll have a laugh.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Bayeux Tapestry there.
All right, Bayeux Tapestry. So anyway, that's the... Our segue is, talking of international conflict, let's get on with the Olympics.
Yeah, right. I was waiting for you to grasp at your transition there. I think you had signaled that ahead of you.
All right, so this is our Olympic preview.
Yeah, special. Winter Olympics.
Winter Olympics,
you know, we've got a history of Olympics. We went to an Olympic Summer Olympics in London. That was the most convenient way to do it. This one's in Pyongyang.
With that in mind, I guess.
Is that how you pronounce it? Again, I'm back in the...
Yeah, South Korea.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw you a question right now off the top. We've both been to an Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to be ho-hum about the Olympics in general, but I went, had a fabulous time. That said, if you said to me, do you want to go to the Winter Olympics? I would probably go, it's not my thing. What's your position?
It'd obviously be a much different thing. First of all, it's cold all the time. I know somebody who went to the one and was in Alberta, I think, went to some of the events, and it was like, you know, going to see skiing, you just walk on up there. I mean, I think they have some ticketing, but it's not.
Yeah,
it's not like going to basketball games or things where you obviously have, you know, the skating events that are going to be limited ticketing, but a lot of it is much more, I think, relaxed would be the right word.
Yeah,
even though it's like cold and you're bundled up and the like, but it's less of a production. It's so much smaller. I mean, the Summer Olympics have, I think, about I figured out 42 categories of events.
Meanwhile, according to this official transcript, the Winter Olympics has
36. And then the winter only has about like 15.
It's 15 according to the sheet. So as we dive into this, we are going to rank Olympic events for you at home.
Right. Well, we'll come up with our own rankings as we go through them and talk about.
I do want to say this. I'm now going to make a statement about the Winter Olympics. And obviously, if you are someone in a cold climb, you are going to yell at your computer and say awful things about me. When you watch the Summer Olympics, the odds are at some point in your life you've played those one of those sports. And even if you haven't, you've gone for a run or you've thrown something. For me, the complete skill set of the Winter Olympics is completely alien to my growing up in London life. Yes, I've been on a sled when it snowed, but that's as close as I've got.
Yeah, I don't engage in any competition.
I don't skate. And so right at that moment, the Winter Olympics to me is very much this sort of weird exotic sports event. And yeah, so is much of the Olympics, but I have a different, within my DNA, relationship with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't do any of it. And when it snows, I'm staying indoors.
It's because of your Norman heritage.
Yes, there you go, yeah. Because France don't seem to win a lot of medals in this. No. Actually, they do, don't they? But
well, relatively.
Britain don't.
There's a bunch of speculative medal counters. And I think they've got Germany.
Apparently,
it might be Norway or something.
The official British position is come back with two or three and the Winter Olympics are a success for us. That was a statement by someone out of Team GB who may have lost his job the next day after saying that, but that's our position.
Because Russia,
of course, we hoovered up like 30 at the regular, the normal Olympics.
Russia, of course, is out. Russia's not, they've been banned from these, just 4 years after their last ones because they cheated so much.
Yeah, they're going to get banned from esports. But that's a different show. Yeah.
There's the guy who's, I think there's a movie on Netflix now, a documentary about the guy who's the whistleblower from Russia who
ban actually holding?
Mm-hmm. What they said is we're going to ban the country, but individual athletes can apply, and if they show they are not a part of the doping,
you can do this under the Olympic flag.
So there'll be individuals. Nonsense. Yeah, it's on the Olympic flag. So it's not no hockey team or anything like that. Although the hockey's kind of going to be a little different this year because there's no NHL people to begin with.
I'm trying to think now. If I'm Vladimir Putin, do I want my people to go independently and win, and then I'm giving you a thumbs up to the rest of the world anyway? Or if you're a Russian athlete and you go and compete independently, when you come back, you're getting your legs broken.
No, I think he's going to want the win. He'll claim the credit for the win.
Yeah,
they're not going to make people stay home. Yeah. So we're going to go that and talk about if people hadn't come after us, we'd be doing all this.
So no Russians.
Right. So,
but then it's just like people making up teams on their own. Do we want to go there first? Because apparently the North Korea are going to have a joint team with South Korea.
Yeah, that does seem a little unfair. Like, what if U.S. and Canada got together to do their hockey team or something like that?
Oh, can't Britain and France get together and then we can win a whole load of things that French
are good at. Adds an element of like playing Risk to it. Like, that it's a little alliance. get along. Yeah. What if they decide in the latter rounds to then split the team?
Yeah.
Now that we've done this, we're going to go ahead and change up the team. But
there's a little bit, and I understand it's like world peace and everything. But it also upsets my sense of sportsmanship.
Yeah.
To be honest with you...
Presumably, it only works because they're pretty bad to begin with.
Maybe.
Because if they were a big deal country, people would be like, hold on a second.
But I'm a stickler for the rules. And even if that means living under the threat of nuclear Armageddon, then we've got to follow the rules.
Somebody might have said, if this reduces the chance of a nuclear war, we'll go ahead with it. That's okay if the hockey teams are unified.
But for me, I'm not comfortable with that.
So I'm not going to run through all the
counter. It's like me going, I'm really Swiss, and then claiming and getting happy every time someone from Switzerland wins a skiing medal. Yeah, but I'm not Swiss. I'm just doing that for the Olympics.
Yeah, but lest people become alarmed. So, like we mentioned, there's 15 events.
I guess it's in a good course.
We're going to talk about the ranking of the events. We're not really going to do each individual event. So there's basically, you can look at the hierarchy or what's the word for genus and when you organize animals into genus, species, things like that. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
This is a version. Interestingly enough, on the actual Olympic website, there's three buckets of games, they said. There are snow sports.
Okay.
There are ice sports.
Okay.
And there are sliding sports. And the sliding sports being the ones that go down in the track, the
luge, toboggan,
and all that sort of
stuff.
It does seem like it's an ice sport, although technically maybe what's in there.
Sounds a bit like they're fleshing.
I think it is ice now the way they work on it.
Okay.
But the ice sports, most of the ice sports are, I guess they're not all indoors because I think some of the skating is outdoors.
And I hate to say this, they're pretty much all sliding sports.
Well, that's right.
I mean, that's the thing about
it. I think it's because the surface inside of the bobsled run was, it's maybe ice now, but maybe traditionally it was snow. So those are three categories. And then we have the 15 sports groupings.
Okay.
But within there, there's multiple. And so, like, let's just use an example, which we were going to start right at the top with alpine skiing. Alpine skiing is the category in which is downhill skiing, you know, so no gates, just a big bomb it downhill and the big skis. Super G, which is large gates going back and forth. Giant slalom, which is a little smaller. Slalom, which is smaller combined, which is a mixture of them. And parallel slalom, which I actually... Why is parallel slalom? That's, you know, the slalom's the two going down the
that's
same
the
time.
That's the two of them. Yeah, that's when you race. That's head to head.
I don't think there's a separate slalom. Anyway,
yeah, that's but it's what head to head.
Here. Yeah, yeah.
Whereas the other ones, you're going against the clock.
Yeah, but I don't,
can I make a statement right there?
I think you're going against the
clock. I don't like any of this stuff, but I think super... Whenever I hear someone on TV go super G, I'm like,
cool,
it sounds pretty exciting, didn't it? And then it's just dudes going through gates. But then it's super G.
Yeah, yeah. The super G, though, is like barely any gates. It's just slightly more curvy than downhill. Downhill is like you really just completely bomb it. So that's we're going to treat that as alpine skiing as a category. We're not doing the individual sports within there. You know, we're going to start some preliminary rankings and start sliding
them in. Ranking.
Like, so, I mean, obviously, alpine skiing is number one right now because we haven't picked any others.
Okay.
And it's a decent chance it might actually stay up there, but we'll have to go through our things and see if you slot things above or below it.
Okay.
Next after alpine skiing.
Biathlon.
Yeah. Let's see if there's anything else I say about alpine skiing, but we can always come back to it.
Biathlon is basically skiing and shooting stuff.
Right.
And can I say this? How come you have that in the Winter Olympics?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the Summer Olympics, there's no running and shooting stuff.
Maybe there should be.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's an opportunity for the... If we're looking to get the games to the Summer Games, maybe some sort of biathlon where you run around and then you shoot stuff.
Right.
All the shooting in the Summer Games is very stationary. And some of those dudes don't know that they could run very far.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not having a pop at them, but in the biathlon, I don't know if it's just a...
Presumably it evolves from, like, you hunting. Go hunting out there in your hunting, skis. Yeah. And obviously the whole goal is, you know, you're totally out of breath, but then to calm yourself down enough to shoot. But, well, you know...
But they're allowed to
drink.
They
should, maybe in the regular thing they don't have to run. They could just do a set.
No, they're allowed to drink.
What do you mean?
Bruce? You didn't notice, did you? That in the regular Olympics, one of the training secrets is right before you go out there, you take a shot of something, or athletes are allowed to, because it does help to steady those little nerves.
All right.
Look that up on the internet.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, it just moved up in my rankings.
I do find it interesting that it's biathlon, but it's with guns. If it goes, it's interesting. I'd like to know what the moment came when, obviously, because it does have its history in hunting, how come there's no skiing and archery? That'd be kind of cool, wouldn't it? Skiing around, and then you have to hit targets while you're moving. And that's what I'm saying.
Probably because once people had guns, they got rid of the bow and arrow.
Okay. I think the biathlon is one of those sports. Yeah, it seems like this odd combination just to get some more people involved. I think there's room to make it better.
All right.
So you need to hit stuff. You need to shoot while you're moving.
Yeah.
This skiing somewhere.
Or shoot the other players. You know, I don't mean like kill them, but like, you know, you can have sort of a paintball sort of system.
Yeah, there you go.
Where you take them out.
So within that,
there's a sprint, which is 10 kilometers. It's not a sprint.
It's not really a sprint, is it?
Individual men's, which is 20 kilometers, and these men's and women's. It's kind of interesting. Like on some events, the long events, they still have differences between men and women. Well, that's not really the case in like running. It's not like, you know, the marathon's a different length for men and women. I feel it's like this is a little patronizing.
I'm going to rank biathlon below.
But then they have pursuit, which I'm not sure what pursuit is, and then there's a relay, and then a mass start, meaning like most of these events they do them on like time starts so that everybody's all by themselves. But mass start is obviously so you're knocking everybody over with your guns and the like.
I'm going to rank it below alpine skiing because, as I just said, there's so much room to improve this sport.
Right.
At each other, firing at moving targets, all kinds of ways to get your ratings up on this sport.
So, currently number two.
Number two.
All right.
All right. So the next one on the official Olympic list, bobsleigh.
Yeah. By the way, I should mention we do have this information, so we might as well share it. I forget when the alpine skiing was first done in 1936. The biathlon really only started in 1960.
Yeah.
So it's a relatively, you know, so
looks
despite
like
its weird
the first Winter Olympics was 1924.
I guess so.
Yeah.
So bobsleigh was in 1920.
No, it's not your guess, so it is.
Well,
none of these events were started before.
Yeah, but there could have event. They could have had an Olympics that didn't have any of these events.
That seems unlikely to me.
Yeah, it does seem unlikely, but it's possible.
Unless you just ran around in those shoes.
It's like when you look at the really old first, like the first Summer Olympics, there was like a lot of weird
things. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Anyway, shuffleboard.
So bobsled. Like, first of all, since when is it bobsleigh? What happened to bobsled?
I think a bobsleigh is what you're on. Bobsledding. Bobsleigh is the noun. Bobsledding is the verb. Plus, have you ever seen that Cool Runnings? Bobsled, man.
Yeah, well, so they say bobsleigh,
man. They don't pronounce it that way.
Yeah, bobsleigh makes me think of, like, you know, one horse open sleigh. You know, it's just more cute with little bells and horses.
Did those Jamaicans win a medal that year?
No.
All right, give me a chance. When we get to the ski jump, I'm going to go off about the Olympics.
You know the guy in the Summer Olympics, the Tonga guy who went out there with no shirt? Apparently he's a bobsledder now also, so there's going to be a Tonga bobsledder.
All right, so as we all know, do different combinations of...
And so there's another one where there's a gender bias. There's a four-man and a two-man race, and there's only a two-woman race. Like, they can come up with four women for the bobsleigh.
I'm sure they will by the next Olympics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think of the bobsled?
You know, I was going to rank this high because I like it. They get up to some real speeds occasionally. The wrecks are good. I mean, dudes die on this thing, so respect for that. But then in this moment, you've just talked about the Tonga guy. I'm thinking of Herschel Walker and a whole list of other athletes who've transitioned in from other sports.
You know, have you seen the video of the guy who does that run at the Atlanta Braves games? You know,
Is he a bobsledder now?
Yeah, he was getting into bobsledding, I think.
Yeah, sorry. So I'm ranking
the freeze. You've never seen the thing? It's like where he races against, like, spectators, and, like, the spectators get a big head start and he catches him.
I'm not going to hammer it that once it starts, one dude is driving and everyone else is just riding down. I'm not going to hammer it.
I'm not sure how much they're driving. That's the thing, is that it says they're driving, but, like, I don't know.
No, they do. You have.
I mean, I know they steer something, but I don't know.
They steer, and obviously by affecting steering inputs, you can inadvertently take speed off your vehicle. I mean, to be fair, again, I think it's exciting sport. I like watching it.
Yeah.
The cowbells are going. I mean, these dudes are doing like 70 mile an hour.
Tell you what, it's
down.
An easy watch. You know, like, put it on. You know what's going on.
But you know something? I'm ranking it below the other ones because to be fair, I mean, you're doing 15,000 push-ups for your New Year's resolution. And if you said to me, I feel fit enough to join the bobsledding team, I'm going to go... That's great.
You're going to be faster in your lower body.
And I would be both proud and critical of you at the same time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm ranking it below. I'm ranking it below biathlon, frankly.
So this started in 24, which is technically before the alpine skiing even started. So who the heck knows what was going on then. But then it took off 1960 for some reason.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Yeah. Maybe they tried to have the Olympics. It was too warm or something.
Could
have
been that.
It could have been. All right, so the next one is cross-country skiing.
Cross-country skiing. And they have a whole bunch of events. And this is like almost like track. I mean, there's sprints and 30s and 15s and 50Ks and relays. I mean, it's not as much as track, but it's close.
Okay, I'm gonna come strong here.
Yeah.
I'm ranking it below skiing. These guys are all cows. They don't have the guts to go downhill.
They're also
cowards and pacifists because they'll do all this without carrying a gun.
Yeah.
So double whammy there against you.
So you're putting them below biathlon as well.
Yeah. And I mean this dead seriously now. Biathlon combines two different skill sets.
Yeah.
Cross-country skiing is just cross-country skiing.
Do you think the biathlon people are actually very good cross-country skiers or they're like mediocre cross-country skiers?
I think they're mediocre cross-country skiers.
Yeah, it just seems like you can only go into this. Because if you took the set of cross-country skiers and then the set that can shoot.
And I do mean this deadly seriously, too. I mean,
Deadly
seriously.
It seems a little bit more serious than you really
super
did.
Seriously. In the Summer Olympics... Within the world of the Summer Olympics, you know, whoever wins the decathlon tends to be referred to as the greatest athlete.
Exactly, right.
You know, because they've mastered many different disciplines.
Dan and Dave.
Yeah, Dan and Dave. Daley Thompson from my youth. So here, again, how come you dudes aren't on the biathlon team? Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm going to rank it below that because it's the same thing but without any of the
extra
stuff.
Are we trying to come up with a unified ranking or you come in your own ranking? I see you're not writing anything
down. No, I can do.
All right.
I'm
going to put it above the biathlon because I'm just going to say they're better athletes pretty clearly. Like the biathlon people may be interesting, but there's no chance.
You keep your ranking. Yeah. So I've got alpine skiing. I've got biathlon above bobsledding.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got bobsledding above cross-country skiing. I've got cross-country skiing at the bottom at the moment.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. That's a dramatic thing. I've got it, too. All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Now, if we didn't have the biathlon, I might put cross-country skiing above bobsledding. Because I do feel there's a couple of people just going along for the ride on that bobsledding.
Mm-hmm.
But you know something? No, I'm putting it bottom.
All right, then. Next one. Listen, if you want to talk about weird sports, here we go. Curling.
This is going to the top of my list.
Curling was played in 1924, so before the skiing, but then not again until 1998.
I know, which...
We have men's, women's, and mixed doubles.
Great sport.
Do they have a men's doubles, or are they just...
I think they did.
No. Yeah, well, there's always multiple people out there now. No.
It's a team game.
Yeah.
It's a team game. I actually spend a lot of time on TV. I find it an incredibly soothing watch. I ended up watching like US Open qualifying on what channel is it called? It's like NBC Olympics now on my cable, whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
I find it big game in Scotland. Yeah. I think my gran used to know all about it because she's from Scotland.
Yeah.
And if it's not Scottish, it's crap.
Well, I don't recall ever seeing any great Scottish sport. People winning.
Oh, yeah, but they're on the team.
There's people in the Midwest. Yeah, but why can't they win that? If it's been
we
such beat a... them.
We won medals last time, Britain. I mean, the British team is full of Scots, but it's Team GB, right. And we'll beat them. We're going to win a medal. That. Yeah, it's one of Scotland's big sports.
Hmm.
You throw stones down. That. It is a version of...
Shuffleboard
or bowling or any of those sort of like target sports.
No, you don't hit anything because you just, it's like bowling, you hit pins. There's no pins.
No, I mean lawn bowling. Are you not aware of lawn bowling? Okay. Or boules, talking about France. So right. Those sort of games. I like curling a lot. I find it a great watch. And I rank it the highest.
Highest?
Yep, I'm going right in there.
No, I'm not going to give it that. I mean, I'm going to put it...
You start watching. If you're chilling out,
I'm like, listen, yes, it's a good watch.
You're chilling out at home.
It's a good watch, but let's talk about.
You've got your liquid refreshment.
In the realm of athletes,
you're just going to sit there and watch it. You're going to fall asleep. You're going to wake up. Then there you go.
In the realm of athletes, they're like golfers, right? Like, so they have these fine, repeatable motor skills.
Yeah,
but they're not, you know, like
athletic.
They're not going to beat anybody in a fist fight.
Well, how do we know the alpine skier is unless he just barrels into them?
Just more athletic.
I mean, the bobsledder guy might run him over.
Yeah. No, I guess actually they'd beat some people in a fight because they're probably a bunch of them.
I'm going with Colin. I really like it. And you know something? I'm not going to make a real...
Do they get to drink before that? Because that would be key to enjoying curling if you were actually doing it.
Any sport where someone's carrying what looks like a broom, I'm like, yeah, I'm up for that.
Hey, you know, I guess the Scottish people do, because don't the Scottish people do that thing where you roll the ball down the street and go from town to town?
I don't know. I think most countries have a version of that, don't they?
Yeah.
I'm going to say this for curling too. I rank it so
you're
so
putting
high.
It at the top. I'm going to put it.
It is something unique. It rolls out there once every 4 years, and to me, that's part of the Olympics.
All right. Yeah. So no. I mean, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. I'm ranking it top. Sorry. Yeah. Ranking it
well,
top.
I'm putting it behind cross country.
Plus, so Tiger Woods never dated a curler, only a skier. So there you go.
I don't know how that is a positive or a negative.
Well, it's a negative. It's a positive for curling.
All right. So here's the next one. Big one. Big time. Big thing. We're going alphabetically. Anybody know comes after C? Figure skating.
Oh, God.
Which, by the way.
All right.
They're mixing in ice dancing in there. So figure skating includes, obviously, singles, pairs, all that stuff. Ice dancing, team event, which I don't remember a team event.
You've known me for many, 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 many years. So what I say now is not new to you, and it's not new to anyone listening who knows me personally. I have a real problem with sports that are judged.
Yeah.
It's nothing to do with athletic ability. And let's face it, figure skating over the years, I guarantee there will be a scoring controversy at this Olympics to do with figure skating. I feel dead seriously that this undercuts the sport's credibility.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that over the years there's been plenty of controversies in Olympic boxing, but at least in boxing, yeah, occasionally you can land a blow and knock the other dude out and there's no points controversy. I struggle with figure skating all the time, and I'm not knocking its athletic value. Obviously, you've got to be an athlete. Yeah, I've got a problem with the flowers and a little bit with the makeup, although the lady curlers wear makeup, so I can't use that as a criticism. I've got a problem with the outfits. But at the end of the day, being serious now, the whole point of sports is somebody beats someone else either head-to-head or against the clock. And in this nebulous world of figure skating, and I'm going to throw diving in there from the summer games, I don't know. It's all a bit suspect. No one really knows who's winning, and I've got a problem with that.
Well, so I wholeheartedly agree with you. I really kind of hate figure skating.
Yes.
And I don't even think I watch it when it comes on. I'll avoid it.
Yep.
I think, you know, compared to diving, it's even worse. Like, so diving has got a judgment, and so is the gymnastics, right?
Gymnastics too.
But
I just struggle with it.
But the realm of things you do, particularly in diving, is pretty narrow. You jump off a thing and you flip and you turn and stuff like that. So, like, you can have a judgment element there, but the world of what you're judging is easier to deal with. Because ice skating, figure skating, has this partly athletic moves. You get bonus points for trying the triple this and the lutz and stuff like that. But it's also partly about
how smile.
Graceful are you? And are you,
now suddenly you're like, not smiling, well,
that's too big of a range, too much of a realm. And you know, the stories of corruption in the sport and vote trading or score trading are well known, of, you know, judges who basically say, okay, I'll score your person from your country better if you score my person better. And this all the time come with these controversies. My cat just broke into the room.
The official cat of the Atlantic Voice podcast.
Apparently
has just shown up
about,
in the new
about figure
studio.
Skating.
Yes, he's making his case now. No, I'm with you. I just...
So I really don't like it. That said,
if it didn't exist, no one would watch the Olympics.
Year in, year out, it would be about
it is
half
the
off.
Highest rated event of the whole thing.
I meant to look this up because
across the world, not just America.
Because we have to talk now about
Tonya
Harding, because we have a movie, and we've had lots of things talking, and now it's a bit of a hot take out there as to the rehab of her.
Since
she appeared at the Golden Globes.
Yeah,
25.
In 1993. So it's the
It was 94 Olympics, so maybe not.
94, so it's close, yeah. Okay, whatever. Let's not get hung up on the
movie. But it's mostly the movie. So the I, Tonya movie came out with Margot Robbie playing her. I haven't seen it.
No, I've not seen it.
The same time, ABC did a little documentary, I think a two-hour TV show. Not a documentary, like an interview show.
And there is a great 30 for 30 called that one's The Price of Gold.
Yeah.
There's the 30 for 30 about the men's 100 meters Olympic race with Ben Johnson and Carl Lewis. And I can't remember what that's called. I think that might be called the Tarnished Medal or something like that. Mm-hmm. But there's a 2 hour or at least an hour and a half, 30 for 30. I think it's called The Price of Gold. And it goes deep inside everything that happened back then when apparently not really to her knowledge, goons in Tonya Harding's entourage,
her husband at the time,
took a billy club or whatever you call it.
Even young people,
a blackjack, I think you call
story.
It, and attempted to smash up the knee of rival Nancy Kerrigan. Didn't really do a very good job because she still hadn't turned up in the Olympics. I remember that year, going back on everything I've said, even I watched the first night they were on ice together because of everything that was. It was the best thing that ever happened to figure skating in terms of impressing the audience of one sitting across from you. I don't know with Tonya Harding.
Well, I mean, the whole thing to point out now is between the movie and just talking about it, and actually to some extent...
She definitely does seem to be on some sort of redemption tour.
Right. And I don't even know if it's her who's...
I think she benefits. I think one thing that's always come across to me...
Really?
And Tonya... Well, no, in watching a lot of these documentaries, you know, there is something quite...
I don't think she's motivated. You're giving her too much credit for having control over this stuff. She doesn't have the control to put herself... She's not using PR people. Her agent just quit or something like
no,
that.
No, but unlike Nancy Kerrigan, who pretty much spent 20 years saying, I don't want to talk about it and I don't give interviews about it.
Right.
Tonya Harding has been more than happy to retell her side of the story.
Remember the difference is... here's the thing is... destroyed her life far more. Like, so there's a problem in the sense that the premise that she has always said is, I didn't know about this. She did get in trouble, but she got in trouble anyway, not so much because she was involved before the fact, but because she didn't totally tell everybody what was going on after the fact.
It's that classic,
So she never got any big things, but she got banned out of figure skating. Like, to the point she can't coach, she can't do anything for anybody in any sanctioned figure skating.
Yes, I do agree with you,
This is, you know, if you're her and don't have a big background, you know, a bunch of skills and education, you're doing this stuff as a kid, and you come from a hard background.
Which
and like
she did.
The fact that she was pretty badly treated by her mother and maybe by her husband.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, you know, so like the fact that she's out there, she's got nothing else to peddle other than occasionally appearing. You know, she did that boxing match with Paula Jones.
I didn't mean to criticize her, because I always found it at the time. There is something about Tonya Harding that if it wasn't figure skating, if she was a tennis player, we'd be rooting for her. But I think because there is this sort of, and again, I'm going to tie it into my issues with figure skating as a sport. There tends to be this whole sort of, etiquette is not a wide enough word, but there seems to be a whole, like apparently, you know, Tonya Harding was very athletic rather than graceful. Nancy Kerrigan apparently is the equal as an athlete, but she apparently reluctantly knew that you had to play the game a certain way. Mm-hmm. And in a strange way, even though they were painted for at the time as two entirely different people, obviously in this very simplistic good and bad type narrative that came out of it, they were very similar in terms of who they were as athletes. But I think the difference was that Nancy Kerrigan, and I don't know
if that's actually true, but...
No, but Nancy Kerrigan also understood better than Tonya Harding that there was a way you had to do it with figure skating. Whereas I think Tonya Harding at that time wanted to show in the way that Mike, you know, took
it. No, she was more defiant. But also, like, I was reading a bunch of things, and, you know, like, what do I know about, like, how the sport works? But they were saying she was definitely more athletic. She, you know, she was the first American, there was not the first person, but the first American woman to do a triple axel, I think that's what it was. But had apparently like no skills on like the graceful stuff. Now, we just said that this is what makes it stupid, like, so who cares?
Well, yeah, and what I'm saying, I think that the analogy I was going to run there was Tonya Harding came to it like Michael Jordan taking off for a dunk. But at the end of the day, a dunk is 2 points. Do you know what I mean? And in figure skating,
right,
you have to be good at the other stuff.
But they said, I think that they were different. I mean, Kerrigan was athletic in the way, like, she wasn't... Oksana Bayul took the gold, and she was much more like ballerina type stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And but like, you know, she was certainly more graceful, and but just fit the mold of these things. But here's the thing, you know, this rehab thing is dependent upon what you think, because if you think she's been lying all these years, and she was involved in this stuff, well, then you go, you know, that's just desserts. Although there's a version of it that basically says, well, even if that's the case, you know, even if she was involved, it's been 25 years, and, you know, she didn't kill somebody. You know, like, it's not like you should be completely out of any chance of making a living after that. But put that aside. But if you assume that she was not involved, if you believe her, then this is crazy. Like, this is crazy that this person has completely lost any ability to make a livelihood.
But that's the problem with this sport, isn't it? It's like some sort of high school cafeteria, you know, conflict. Do you know what I mean? Right. That's the trouble with it as a sport. And I want to keep staying. I mean, I will say this about Tonya Harding. It's not that I don't find her a sympathetic figure, because I do believe at a certain moment, you know, it's a bit like, you know, President Nixon gone, I didn't know about it. Everyone knows about it. I have sympathy for her, but I see her more as a tragic figure rather than as a sympathetic figure. But I don't hold her any grudges now. I'm not suggesting I have a problem with her making any money from any of this. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah.
I always find it. I want to believe that she didn't know, because I do find her story, you know, basically, you know, working class in a sport where you need money and you need, you know, connections a little bit, you know. She's almost the perfect underdog, but then this shows up, and it's like, ugh, we're not so sure about it all. And so she's a tragic.
I want to come back to the whole rehab, the image, because I don't think she doesn't have the control of her image. The other thing that's made this a big deal, and I think it's probably actually what led to the movie, was this sort of bite back from the women's movement, the Me Too movement. You know, where, I'm sorry, I'm laughing because of my cat, not because of the Me Too movement.
That's all right.
But there's folks are saying, okay, let's hold on. I said, let's reevaluate her overall, like, because, okay, again, assuming she wasn't the one who did it, now take into account the fact that she was clearly abused and,
she was treated,
and poorly treated
as
a woman.
Yeah, she's
generally
a rough ride.
So, like, you know, the fact you're doing it. Somebody said that I guess she's 47 now. This column I was reading where, like, she did some skating. Maybe she did some skating in the ABC thing. And they said she still, like, freaking jumps like
oh, yeah,
great, like, she's super athletic. Yeah. And, like, I mean, why a person like that? Like, if we conclude that it's at least not been proven that she knew anything. I mean, at this point, there's certainly no criminal case. There's not even a civil case that, like, you know, somebody came after and said, okay, you were complicit in this stuff. Well, this person ought to at least be able to be a teacher, you know, at least be able to coach somebody, because I think a bunch of girls would jump at the opportunity.
I mean, again, these are all the reasons why figure skating goes to the bottom.
Yeah,
and exactly. It stays at the bottom because, unfortunately, neither Tonya Harding nor Nancy Kerrigan are in it this year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, you know, the big story was that people were clearly, so I put it at the bottom also.
So it goes at the bottom.
But one of the stories was there's a woman from around here, I forget her name.
Allison Wagner?
Yes, so it was a little bit older, like in the sense of being like 25 or something like that.
She was fierce.
And that was going to make the big story. And like everybody was clearly making that up there, and then she didn't make it on. And you know, she's complaining about scoring.
And I do, yeah. No, I'm not going to go there on figure skating. No. What I mean is I also hate the fact that because... But I get it because it is the number one ratings thing. So I always feel that even more so than other Olympians... The figure skaters come in with some sort of predefined image and narrative to fit this story that TV is telling us.
We're maybe going too long.
Really irritates me.
We're really going on too long. I was going to say, how do we? How do you fix figure skating? If you made a better version, here's my idea. Right, is
people going side by side? So side by side. So you put a thing up in the middle and you go side by side. They have to do the same routine.
Well, the same. I thought about the side by side thing. You jump right into
eye sees. Cannot lie.
Right. I mean, I do think you could do it. You could do it non side by side, but everybody has to do the same thing. I know
there's do it quicker. Yeah. But no, I know it sounds like I'm making fun here, but I hate the fact that there is no definitive ranking that I, the spectator, can sit back and see that one's better than that one.
Yeah.
And there are days when you watch a soccer game and the worst team wins, but you know something. As much as you go, they didn't deserve to win, they scored more goals than the other guy. That's what it says in rule one of the game. Score more goals than the other team. Mm-hmm. I have a problem with figure skating because none of us really know who the winner
is. Let's talk about flipping around, because the next event on the list is freestyle skiing. So that includes mogul skiing, aerials, which is, you know, like go off the ramp and flip around a bunch, ski cross, which is like... everybody skiing down something at the same time, and you can knock people over.
Yeah, I really like that. That's what it's all about for me.
And then super pipe, which is, you know, like half pipe skiing, slope style, which I think it's sort of a combination between moguls and like jumps and things like that. It's like a stylish going down there. All judgment items, by the way, right?
No, apart from the one where they're racing down the hill.
That's true.
Yeah. All right, so here we go now.
But what I was going to say, like, so let me jump because it's a segue from that. It's just like this diving. Not only do I have a I appreciate the fact that there's judgments, but I can't see enough. Like when people are like, oh, that was a triple flip with a this, that, and the other thing, I go, you need to come up with a graphic that explains the way this person is twisting around, because I can see they're twisting around a lot and flipping, but I don't see whether it's three or two times, or, you know, if it's a half Lindy or whatever the heck it is.
Okay. I like the fact that they have the one, and again, because we don't get to separate out these events, so we have to rank the whole thing.
That's what I'm saying.
I like the fact that they've got a race where everyone's going downhill together and there's a winner. Mm-hmm. So right there, that slots freestyle skiing close to the top for me, so it's probably about third. But then we do have this aspect of judging. So that drops it down, you know, about one spot for me, maybe two spots. It moves back up again, though, because when I watch this stuff... Those dudes, they've got some guts to do that. So it moves back up again. Unfortunately, those dudes are all like guys down at my local skateboard park. So that drops it down another two slots again. So it's had this snakes and ladders type sort of history where it's gone up and it's gone down. I'm going to rank it in there above cross-country skiing because it's kind of boring, but below bobsledding.
All right. Well, obviously our rankings are getting differenter and differenter.
Well, that's
the
whole point.
But I'm going to put it...
How can I beat you if we have the same stuff?
Well, there's nothing to beat me at.
No, don't worry. I'm going to claim a victory somehow.
Yeah. I'm going to put it worse. It's better than biathlon. No, it's worse than biathlon. So it's above bobsledding. That's what I'm going to say.
Ooh. So, okay. So we have a difference.
Well, that's because you have bobsledding up high. Bobsledding is my second to bottom now. So right now I'm at alpine, cross country, curling, biathlon, freestyle, bobsled, figure skating.
Okay.
All right. Next is ice hockey.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks for itself. It's above figure skating, but it's below everything else. Because you know something? I can see superior ice hockey by watching TV. Yeah. You told me beforehand.
The only thing is, there's like a couple of games. You get the nationalistic stuff.
I don't care about Olympic soccer, to be fair, because I'm going to watch the World Cup. I feel like, you know, Olympic ice hockey is sort of the same. I understand it's nations and everything, but and it's easier for me to maybe take that tack because my own nation sucks at it.
Yeah.
So we're never in it anyway. So I'm like, yeah, if I want to see these guys, I'd rather watch, you know.
This one will suffer from the absence of Russia. Also, no NHL player this exactly. year, which might make it more interesting because maybe there'll be a bunch of college kids. But I'm going to put it
above figure skating. Yeah, I would rank it higher because it has had a couple of really good movies, Mighty Ducks, Miracle, all to do with ice hockey. But I'm leaving it down there for the reasons I've just given you.
All right, then.
All right, so on to the next one.
Luge in the sliding sports. So we've got... this is another one where there's a difference in the genders. Men's and women's singles, men's doubles. I don't know. Why is there no women's doubles? The team relay. By the way, anybody doesn't remember, we're going to mention skeleton. Luge is
what's
the one where
team relay?
I don't know.
I see. I almost feel like I need to have my annual asterisk.
It's got to be something like where the next person starts at the time the person goes. I don't know.
See,
I mean, it's not like they hand a baton over halfway down the thing.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
That would be great.
That's not happening.
But unfortunately not. So I don't know what that is. I'm going to say this about Luge, and I'm going to jump ahead to skeleton as well.
Yeah, we should.
Probably. And while with skeleton...
So big difference for people who don't know. Luge is on your back. Skeleton's on your stomach, head facing down.
Okay. I'm not going to group them together. Luge is kind of a variant of... bobsledding. So at that moment, I've got bobsledding currently fourth. Luge goes joint fourth with bobsledding because it's kind of, to me, it's kind of the same thing. It's just different numbers of people and a slightly different thing. And they're using the same course. So for me to put the boot in the luge would be, you know, for luge to rank lower, I would be being illogical. It's kind of, to me, it's kind of the same thing as bobsledding, so it has to be ranked alongside.
But I'm going to put it above bobsledding just because I feel like the people who are doing it are actively engaged in it. Whereas the bobsledder, you got these people just sitting in the back kind of thing.
Yeah, plus to be fair, you know, Dennis Rodman isn't taking up
the There's all technology. Yeah, we didn't even mention on the bobsleds. There's a bunch of technology things, like people who can engineer the best bobsled, like NASCAR.
Yeah.
But that's less so in luge. Why don't we jump ahead to skeleton, because I'm going to put skeleton above those two.
Yeah, because it takes some balls to do that.
Yeah, because you don't smash into something and end up paralyzed.
All right, so skeleton definitely for me, and I think for both of us above. But I'm going to group them all together. Because I feel like I'm being untrue to myself by separating.
Yeah, no, I'm doing the same thing because it's simple that way. Plus, running on. All right, so next we have Nordic combined.
I don't know.
I mean, for people who wouldn't know, you know what it is? It's a combination of jumping, ski jumping, and cross country. So you mix together your scores. It's another version of a biathlon, but you do two separate, not at the same time. It would be cool if it was the same time. But it's the jumping and the cross country, and you somehow mix the scores together.
Okay.
I don't know why they decided that this needed to be together, but...
yeah.
It's basically only one event, I think, or there's a team thing. It's a 10K plus...
How about jumping, but with a gun? Like in that James Bond movie. That'd be really exciting. So that's what I'm saying. So you're flying through the air, and you have to hit a target. That's what I'm saying. There seems to be these odd combinations.
Yeah,
but that James Bond movie is really exciting, where he goes to the what looks some sort of Olympic event, and then the villains are chasing him.
I'm putting this.
The only unrealistic thing is it's Roger Moore, and you just can't help yourself going, "Yeah, that tubby 50-year-old isn't doing all of that."
I'm doing this down the bottom.
No, I'm actually not. I'm actually going to do it above. I'm going to do it just above cross country because at least there's another aspect of skill to it.
Man.
It's combined.
Too gimmicky. I don't think I'm going to watch this thing. Once again, like it's probably a bunch of people who are bad at cross country, but they're ballsy enough to go and jump.
Okay.
What do we got? We haven't talked short track speed skating. We should talk about short track and regular speed skating at the same time.
Okay. Are we going to count it as one event for
No, we have to decide which is better.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Between the two. So short track is basically... You're on something about the size of a hockey rink.
Roller derby.
And you skate. I mean, everybody skates at the same time in the regular, but you can hit each other.
Yes.
And you bang each other around, and people slide off, and they fall down, and they're like... And there's like a relay version where you push everybody's butt.
Yeah.
You know, like when they come around the corner, and then you shove the next guy along, or gal.
I like it. It's exciting. People go flying. I like it. I'll watch it.
All right, so
I'm ranking up there above skiing.
And then regular speed skating is like more like the bike racing, like the velodrome bike racing, where you know you have longer speed going around, and more peaceful. And some of them are long distance, some are short distance. So here's the thing about the short track. We used to really like this in college. It became like a fun.
I think
that was the first time it came out. It was a short track since 92, right? So we'd watch that, and you could make a nice little drinking game out of it, like by betting on the people who are going. But they all fall down too much. Like, half of the ones you see, somebody falls down. Like, and I appreciate that that's the risk, but it completely blows the race. Like, oh, it's skating, bang, somebody knocks him down. I'm like, well, I now did not see the best person. I just saw the most lucky person win a race.
You like NASCAR, don't you?
Yeah.
I rest my case.
What do you mean?
NASCAR just seems to be a whole load of pileups, and then everyone's racing around, and as it turns out, that dude wins. I get it. I like the wipeouts.
Yeah.
And that's part of it, is staying on your feet. I mean, that's part of it. Yeah, there are times when I get what you're saying. There seems to be a few times where someone seems to be eliminated and it looked like he was the one who was pushed or whatever, and I get that. But at the end of the day, it's a race.
That's
pretty hurly-burly. It moves quite quickly.
That said, I'm going to put him up there, but I'm going to say regular speed skating is better than short track. And I know that's sacrilegious to what I used to believe, but I'm going to say, so I'm going to put him up there around fourth.
Ooh, I've got it second under curling.
Well, I have it under curling, but that makes it fourth.
Okay, fair enough.
But that's skating, speed skating, and then below that is short track.
All right,
then we go. We mentioned skeleton already. Now jumping, ski jumping. It's only two events left, actually, the way we group these things. So ski jumping, again, it's just them doing it. Like, I love, like, I think it was one I when we were kids, this counted as extreme sports. You know, they had that opening on the ABC Wild World of Sports with the guy spinning off the side. It was like crazy. Oh, my goodness, people jumping. But now when you look at it, it's you put the skis in the tracks because they don't even like it isn't even like you have to control your skis. There's like grooves that you put your skis in and then you jump up there and you sail. And don't they have a judgment element, too? Isn't it like, I mean, I know it's distance is a part, but I think there's a factor about like your form. And they wear those crazy suits now that are like wings. It's lame.
You see.
And you can't even tell who's better.
And I know, and I get what
you're saying. I don't like the fact that they jump on dirty snow. Because they have to see the snow, so it's all dirty.
There's someone who, you know, is probably, you know.
I am going to put it slightly above Nordic combined.
I really respect. Now, again, I'm someone who was embarrassed by Eddie Eagle. He's not a hero to me. He's a moron.
Eddie the Eagle being a British
dude to finish so badly that he got a movie made out of him.
Yeah, right.
The Winter Olympics seems to create more movies about losers than any other. The regular Olympics has, like, Chariots of Fire and stuff like that.
Well, Miracle's about a winner, so that's cool.
Okay, but the Winter Olympics seems to feature movies about losers, and I've got a problem with that in sports. But you know something? It takes some stones to stand up there way, way up and go flying out there. I do find it, if it's on, it will hold my attention. Now, again, none of these sports hold my attention for half an hour. It'll hold my attention for about 10 or 11 minutes, which is about 5 or 6 minutes more than a lot of these other things. It slots in the middle of the pack for me. For that reason, for the fact that I just respect, there's like a bravery aspect for it. And frankly, I'm surprised more people don't die.
I'm going to move it up above hockey again. I slightly up. But
it goes above all those dudes going downhill.
I think that thing about holding your attention is a problem. No, go above the...
No. I mean the guys like bobsledding and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Just because there's like, ooh, I'm surprised someone hasn't died yet. Mind you, I'm surprised people have died in the other ones. That dude died in skeleton last time out.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's in. I can't separate it out. It's in there. It's definitely above figure skating, ice hockey, and some of that freestyle stuff.
All right. So next, speaking of freestyle things, we have snowboarding, our last of the events. So snowboarding, oddly, they group things differently. So like in the alpine skiing, they have all the regular events, and then you have the freestyle skiing, and you have the weird things. But in snowboarding, they lump them all together because they have parallel, they have half pipe, they have snowboard cross and slope style. Parallel being like they race next to each other like slalom. So that one's on times.
But I do like that.
It's pretty good. I mean, I don't care much for the half pipe slope style stuff. I mean, a half pipe can be kind of interesting because they go up pretty far up there.
Yeah, it's a bit like beach volleyball, isn't it? They're playing the music.
You know what I like about it, though?
Funky lights. And I feel at some moment when people are doing all that for me with my sport, there's some sort of sleight of hand going on that they're trying to fool me that this is better than it is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they've got the music and the stuff going and the lights, and everyone's like, hey, man. And I'm like, okay, Does that make it really, really good?
I'm going to put it just behind Freestyle. No, I'm going to put it above Freestyle.
I'm going to be really mean here.
All right.
I'm going to be really mean. Okay. I'm going to court controversy.
Okay.
I've always thought of snowboarding as surfing on land. Surfing's not in the Olympics. What the heck is this doing there? Goes down the bottom. And I get the athleticism. I get that. I get that. I get the skill. I get that. But at the end of the day,
I think it's a fair critique because, like, you've got skiing. What is skiing? Water skiing on land? I don't know, like.
Yeah, but water skiing is not a fair comparison because you need a boat for that. You need help. You need motorized help. I don't know. I just feel with snowboarding as an Olympic sport. I'm not knocking it as a pastime, as a recreation. Right. I'm not knocking it as an athletic activity. I just feel there's just something about it where it feels gimmicky. And maybe because it's still a relatively new addition to the Olympic canon. Maybe if we're still doing the show in 20 years and we're crotchety old men, more than crotchety old indeterminate middle-aged men, I might feel differently about it. But I think it's a combination of newness, competitors with long hair and two-day-old fuzz, the music. And at the end of the day, I have to be fair. If I'm going to criticize other sports for the judgment aspect, then I have to criticize this one for it. While I respect it more than I do for figure skating, because it is what it is, whereas figure skating is, to a certain extent, everything that's wrong with it, that there's all kinds of other stuff going on. Yeah, it's, you know, it's above free. It's in there. It's sort of tied with freestyle. What was the other one? Freestyle skiing.
Well, I put it above freestyle because it has the parallel race.
Okay.
And it's more interesting to see snowboards in a half pipe than it is to see.
Yep, fair enough. But I think we're like of a like that. So there we go.
All right. So
we're both agreed on what the worst sport is figure skating.
And what did you end up with at the top?
I had curling at the top. Curling,
a crazy person.
Curling at the top, short track speed skating after it. And then, you know, because it is the Olympics and I like the cowbells and the cool name Super G. The alpine skiing. And when someone wrecks and breaks both legs, pretty good TV.
Yeah, my top five were alpine skiing, cross country, curling, speed skating, and short track speed skating. And then from there, I went to snowboard, freestyle, skeleton luge, sled, bobsled, that is, jumping, hockey. I ended up with hockey lower than I really probably should.
I had hockey second bottom, and then I had a whole load of things kind of grouped together.
Yeah.
You know, the shooting one's sort of in the middle because it's combining skills. But I still think, again, there's a part of me, if I was Olympic commissioner for the day.
Olympic czar.
Yeah, Olympic czar. You know, if I was the Vladimir Putin of Olympics.
Yeah.
I would take these.
Putin was the Vladimir Putin of Olympics last summer.
Yeah. I'd get rid of figure skating. The others I'd all keep. But I would make some definite improvements to make it better for the viewer at home.
Yeah.
And maybe next Winter Olympics, we will share how we make these sports better.
We'll think more about that fixing figure skating thing.
It's beyond fixing for me. And now that Strictly Come Dancing is so popular amongst people, really, why isn't that an Olympic sport?
Careful.
Really, why isn't it?
Might end up being one.
That debate is a show of itself. Anything else?
No, I don't think so.
All right, this has been the Atlantic Voice Olympic Preview Special Edition thing.
Now. It became a special during the course of the episode.
I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.